asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we're answering your listener questions.
You know what, buddy? This is a listener question Monday episode. We've got five excellent questions that we're going to get to during this episode. A listener is asking about dropping some money on fancy coffee. That's a frugal or cheap. I'm excited about that one. Another listener has been securing insurance at the cost of investing for his future. We're going to dive into that as well as talk about the best approach to the world of NFTs.
Ooh.
Plus two other ones. But I am also very distracted by your busted up cell phone over there, buddy. I see you've got a cracked screen now.
Yeah, do you have a Band-Aid or anything I can put on top of it?
Well, like, what are your thoughts on the Band-Aids that people put on their cars where there's, like, you know, a giant scratch or a puncture in the, like, a back fender, and they stick, like, the giant, you've seen them, right? Like,
yeah.
The giant Band-Aids that go over them.
No, I'm not. You're just
drawing more attention to it.
Same thing as, like, fake bullet holes or whatever. It's just not a good look.
Either way, yeah. Plus, like, the eyelashes on the headlights.
Right.
Let's just avoid all add-ons, although maybe you could have benefited from an add-on to your cell phone.
Yeah, I could have used a case.
I see you've got no case on that thing.
I have been strongly against...
You're such an anti-case guy.
Cell phone cases.
I remember 2 years ago when you got that thing, you're like, I'm not really a case guy. I baby my electronics, and I'm looking at it right now. It doesn't look so babied.
Yeah, no. And maybe I don't baby them, but at least I don't drop them for the most part. And I have a drop that cracked the screen at least a little bit. I've had this one for a couple of years. The Pixel 4a was $350 when I bought it. But now the charging port's not working very well. It's like, really, I gotta like slam it in there in order to make sure it charges. And the battery just kind of sucks anyway. So
have you checked it for pocket lint? A lot of times that's like if you get some tweezers.
No, let me take a look. Pocket lint in there?
You see? So if you get some tweezers in there, and sometimes it's literal pocket lint.
All right, but I'm not seeing any, but
okay.
Yeah, maybe.
That's not going to solve your battery or
right.
The screen issue, though.
Right, that's the thing. It's got a few issues at this point, so I don't know. I'm trying to weigh my options, and with the... Many
hold out
issues.
For some Black Friday sales, you think?
Maybe, yeah, fall? Maybe. Sometimes I wait until November can pay off, but... yes, it would be wise for me to get a screen. That's the best. That's the cheapest protection. But I also just wish cell phones were a little bit easier to repair yourself, right? And listener Alex, he actually wrote in not too long ago about something called the Fairphone, which is only sold in Europe. And they prioritize more than anything that folks can easily repair anything that goes wrong with their phone, just prolonging the length, meaning that there's less waste and stuff like that. And so I know it's possible for me to DIY some of these repairs, but the...
Still not as easy.
Yeah, it's not easy.
It could be.
Yeah.
I think I saw that. So iFixit.com, it's like the, you know, they're all about self-empowerment as far as you being able to fix your own devices. They, on a scale of 1 to 10, the Fairphone, it ranks a 10 on the fixability yeah. score. I think iPhones and most other popular cell phones get something like a 7, like a 6 or a 7. But the Fairphone gets a 10. Like literally, you can swap out every little piece. It's like a Lego phone where evidently you can just like pop the pieces off. I do wish that that was something that is available to us, but it's not. And maybe I'll take this opportunity to also get a case for my phone because yeah. I've had mine now for about a year. And I haven't. Well, actually, I have dropped it, but I haven't cracked my screen because the new iPhones, man, they got that super, I forget what they call it, the super strong ceramic shield okay. screen or whatever. And I am pretty sure that had I had a previous generation of iPhone, it definitely would have cracked.
Okay.
But I still need to get a screen protector on there in particular. But that also makes me think, do you have any thoughts about switching over to Apple? Because all of your Apple texting friends yeah. would be very thankful to see the green bubble text message disappear.
I'd be up for it.
I would text you more.
Would you?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Oh, I mean, just even like liking something that you send over.
It's more of a pain.
It's just more seamless. Okay. And the little bubbles pop up. As opposed to it saying, Matt just liked, and then the long thing that you sent over.
The things I used to dislike about Apple, I feel like they've changed, and they've actually become more Android-like. And I'm, you know, working with a Mac here at the studio, and so I guess I could see myself going in that direction. The question is, can I get a great Apple phone in the $400 range? Because Google phones are in that price range.
What the SEs are, but that is their, you know, that's their affordable sort of flagship phone.
Yeah.
And that's the one I was rocking. I was rocking the original SE. I had the thing for like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And so I'm just pointing to the fact that there's longevity maybe in some of these iPhones. You might be paying a premium, but it might last longer as well.
I saw that the 12 minis at one point, like a refurb, was like less than $300. And ooh. I was like, okay, I don't know. Maybe I need to jump in that direction.
I like the minis. Battery life, though, that's the issue with the smaller phones. Okay. You can't pack as much battery in
there.
Well,
it's probably better than the one I'm rolling with now, at least.
Probably.
So. All right, well, yeah. Something
to consider, and yeah. I wish Fairphones were available, though.
And prolonging the life of your smartphone, we think is smart, right? If you can get 3+ years out of it, like, you're doing better than most people, and that's a good thing to strive for. I guess once your phone has, like, a bunch of different issues going on, you might need to pivot. And then, yeah, if you can...
Where your phone's basically totaled.
Right, exactly, exactly. And if you can just buy a budget phone, right, that helps too, as opposed to buying the $900-plus dollar model. Maybe you can buy something in, like, the $400 or $500 range.
Yeah.
And then try to keep that one for 3 years. That'll be a big money savings. But, Matt, you want to mention the beer we're having on today's show?
Yeah, this is a Milkstachio. This is a pistachio milk stout brewed with chocolate. This is brewed by Hop Butcher for the World and Dry Hop Brewers. I guess it is a collaboration beer. I'm looking forward to this one, and we will share our thoughts on this one at the end of the episode.
That's right. But let's get on to the topic at hand. We're answering listener questions, and if you have a question for us, we'd love to hear it. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask. There are simple instructions there for you to record a voice message, record your question, and send it our way. We hope to take it on maybe the next Ask HTM episode. But Matt, let's get to this first one. It's a frugal or cheap question. Woohoo!
Hi, How to Money. This is Gina from Western New York. Frugal versus cheap. My rent has doubled, and I'm in a much nicer neighborhood and now living alone rather than with a boyfriend. So my question is about the amenities that are in this neighborhood, which I don't frequent or even visit at all right now because I feel like with the rent increase, I just can't swing it. I don't get very much joy from restaurants or shopping, but I do like the occasional coffee out at a cafe. Am I pushing my budget a little too hard by telling myself no on these things, or should I get that cup of joe every Sunday? Thanks.
Well, Gina, thank you for your question. You know, the frugal versus cheap question is one that we will always take.
You get to the front of the line if you ask frugal or cheap. Like,
I mean, literally, they are the most fun. And so I think every time we have ever had a frugal or cheap on an Ask HTM episode, we always do put it first because we enjoy them. But Gina, we want to start this off talking about the fact that it sounds like you know yourself pretty well. You know, you recognize that certain expensive things, that they don't bring you pleasure. And so because of that, you avoid those things. Like, honestly, knowing yourself and spending money in a way that brings you joy is something that does not get talked about enough. That's a core tenet of our show. We want our listeners to figure out those few things that they get excited about spending their money on, and then to cut back in the other areas that just don't have the same kind of impact. The hard work of personal finance in so many ways is less about the math. You know, if you hate that part of it, there's Mint, YNAB, there's compounding interest calculators online.
Yeah, you don't have to be an Excel spreadsheet nerd.
Exactly.
You know, to kind of do some of the, actually the most important personal finance work.
Well, the nerdier parts of personal finance can be made easier. The hard work is the self-reflection that leads to intentional spending. It leads to managing your money in a responsible way. And it sounds like that is something that you have at least started to go down the path of.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's what we call, Matt, the why behind your money. We've talked about it many times on the show. And it is like, basically, when you know your why, you're more than willing to endure not spending money in other areas that maybe most of your peers are spending their money. Maybe they're taking luxurious vacations or buying brand new vehicles. And you're like, nope, I know myself well enough to know that I don't care about those things. What I care about is going to the coffee shop three times a week or something like that and getting the fanciest latte on the menu. And yeah, I don't know. It sounds like there's
she's talking about just Sundays.
Like just Sundays.
Once on Sundays.
I'm just saying, but at some point, like maybe she does want to go 3 days a week because she's like, that's,
sure.
I want to spend actually in a way that's kind of ridiculous at this coffee shop because I prefer that to the other ways I could be blowing my money.
Sure.
And so, I don't know. It sounds like this is something that moves the needle for Gina. Coffee on Sundays, man. Like, keep going. Make that happen. Get the flavor drizzle on top if that's what you're into. Yeah, we just want, as long as it's purposeful, right? Spending on this indulgence, if it's like a weekend rhythm that's just like makes your Sunday, like, come on. It's such a cheap, it really is such an insignificant expense in your budget. I wouldn't be overthinking this. And, you know, honestly, Matt, you and I, we've recently expanded our coffee budget just a little bit because we have the coolest coffee shop three doors down from HTM headquarters, which is so nice. So it's one of those things where, yeah, we normally, you and I, we're coffee from home guys, and we still do that quite a bit here. But, you know, once or twice a week, we just want to walk three doors down and get a nice cold brew, and we are taking full advantage.
I'm a not coffee from home guy, dude. I'm making that cold brew here in the office.
Yeah.
We got a legit setup going on here. But it's also important to note that too much frugality can be problematic here. And I know this sounds weird coming from the How to Money duo, but it's true, because in an effort to tamp down on all of the extraneous spending, like, some folks are going to end up overdoing it, and that can make life feel pretty crappy. And it can actually have the opposite effect over time of abandoning your budget, quitting any attempts that you might have to save your money, to invest, or to be intentional with your spending. The joyful spending that you get to do is important on a personal level, but it also ensures that you don't get fed up with your attempts at smart money management altogether. I think what's important here is the fact that you've identified some of the bigger things. You've identified that you don't enjoy shopping. You don't enjoy necessarily going out to restaurants. And just think about like one shopping spree, or like going out to a dinner with some friends where you could spend the equivalent at that one meal of a month or even like 2 or 3 months worth of coffee on Sundays.
Yeah.
And so the fact that this is a smaller expense definitely makes it a little bit easier to swallow as well. Like, we talk about craft beer equivalents, right? But the thing is, not all craft beer equivalents are made equal. And somebody might say,
not all craft beer equivalents are equivalent.
that's true. Because someone might say that, like, well, my craft beer equivalent is travel. And it's like, well, it's tough to constantly splurge on travel because that is expensive,
right?
As opposed to something that might be a little more affordable for most people's budget.
A little more regular, a little more part of your everyday or weekly routine.
Exactly.
And yeah, I think that's important to mention. But I also think it's kind of interesting how coffee or coffee-like products have become kind of the scapegoat in the personal finance space. I don't know why this happened. I think maybe it was popularized with the David Bach's book, The Latte Factor, which I did not read. And I think
I've never read that
I think
either.
He's done some good work in this space. place, but I think maybe that's kicked it off. And then avocado toast for some reason and coffee get the short end of the stick, and nobody's supposed to spend money on those things. Sadly, I don't really do avocado toast, but I don't mind a good coffee out every now and again.
I like a good avocado toast.
Yeah, there you go. Do you make it at home, or are you you getting it out at the coffee shop?
I do it at home, but yeah, our local spot, they make a good one as well.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to spend like $15 on a piece of bread that's been burned with, with some chopped up vegetable on it.
Yeah.
But it is something that I enjoy.
Well, I think one more thing worth mentioning to Gina is it might make sense for her actually to move at some point to another neighborhood when her lease is up.
Speaking of the getting the big things right.
Yeah, if you get the big things right, then you can have coffee like every day for the rest of your life out if you want to. Not that you need to go overboard, but she basically said that she doesn't frequent or even actually visit a lot of the cool stuff in the neighborhood where she lives. And cool coffee shops kind of exist almost everywhere, right? And the neighborhood that people choose, it's often something that folks consciously choose to spend more money on. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like the value proposition for Gina is just not making sense for how she lives life. And so, yeah, we would suggest moving where rent is cheaper, Gina. And that one move is going to save you a whole lot more dollars, probably allowing you to do more fun things and prioritize some of the things that you enjoy more than that fancy part of town maybe where you're currently residing.
Yeah, this is kind of a throwback to the episode we did on why it is that we moved, or basically how to move and, you know, do it for less money, I guess. But one of the things we realized, Joel, as we sat down and talked through some of these issues with you and your wife and Kate and I, is we realized there were certain aspects of our old neighborhood that we weren't really taking advantage of as much as we used to. When you're younger, you first move to a neighborhood, oftentimes you'll value being able to walk to restaurants and bars. But, you know, once you have 2, 3, 4 kids, that's not something you do quite as often.
Yeah, it's true.
It's like you think, well, maybe that's something that should get pushed to the back burner on the list of priorities.
For sure. Yeah. So I think that's worth reassessing in Gina's case. Like, okay, is it worth the cost of rent here? Or is there another neighborhood where I could get just as much joy living in, but maybe save a few a few hundred bucks a month when it comes to that monthly rent cost,
totally.
which is significant. So, All right, let's get to a few more listener questions, Matt, including one about investing in NFTs. We're going to get to that in the next segment. And we'll tackle that one and more right after this break. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus 5-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we are back, and we're going to talk about investing in nifties here pretty soon. That's a saying that never caught on. Nobody says nifties.
You keep trying, buddy.
NFTs. We'll get to that one here in a second, but first, let's hear from a longtime listener about tax policy.
Hey, Joel and Matt. This is Masa from Boston. My question is perhaps less personal finance and more economics and politics than you typically discuss on your podcast. In a recent episode, you all mentioned that making all taxes sales taxes should have the effect of disincentivizing consumption, because how much you get taxed will be directly tied to how much you consume. My understanding of what happens when we don't tax income and instead only tax sales or consumption is that people with lower incomes, people who have to spend all of their income, will get taxed at a higher effective rate, whereas higher income people, people who have money left over to, say, invest, even after they consume more in an absolute sense, will get taxed at a lower effective rate. As such, sales tax is regressive. It hits lower income people harder while sparing higher income people. On the flip side, policies that tax higher incomes at an increasingly higher rate, like the US federal income tax system, as well as policies that tax capital gains, are progressive, in that higher income people who can afford to pay more in taxes do pay more in taxes. I understand that whatever choice a country, state, or city makes, and it is a choice, has side effects and unintended consequences. For example, people may argue that taxing capital gains will disincentivize investing in the companies that help our economy grow. An estate tax, while reducing the intergenerational transfer of wealth that perpetuates financial inequity, also has the unintended consequence of financially handicapping populations that have been historically and structurally disadvantaged. Given the laws that already exist for the state and country in which I live, I want to minimize how much I pay in taxes. But taxes pay for the services that I like and need, and I personally also have society-level goals and wants that transcend my individual financial state. Do you all have opinions about how taxation is done overall in the U.S.? Anyway, love your podcast. Keep up the great work.
All right, Masa, thank you so much for that question. And I feel like the instance he's referring to when we were joking about tax policy, it was just very much an off-the-cuff kind of comment. But it does speak to like a deeper truth and something that is worth tackling here.
Yeah.
We don't often talk about tax policy, but it's kind of fun every now and again.
We're not like federal economic experts or anything like this, but we have opinions and thoughts about this stuff. And so if Moss is going to ask the question, why not answer it?
Yeah. And taxes are one of those things that impact, you know, all of our lives in a massive way. Not that we have much direct say in the matter, but it's still fun to think about ways in which the tax system could create different incentives and hopefully more fair outcomes as well.
Yeah, for sure. So let's maybe give some of our thoughts real quick. I mean, I think Masa brings up a great point about the regressive nature of a consumption tax. And so let's dig into that for just a second. There's actually been something that's been around, Matt, since I was a kid. I remember hearing about this called the fair tax. And the fair tax...
I thought you were going to say the flat tax.
No, that's different. That's different. But the fair tax was a movement that was all about creating a national sales tax. Mm-hmm. And what they wanted to do was they wanted to abolish the income tax. They wanted to get rid of it altogether. And what, again, Masa alluded to was the potentially regressive nature of something like that. And so in order to combat that negative outcome, there was going to be a rebate check sent to cover basically the tax on household necessities like food, gas, etc. So this could even be, if you think about Andrew Yang's campaign and universal basic income, which has become kind of more prominent as a policy potentially worth implementing. Like that's kind of what would be happening as people are, they're getting a prebate check even ahead of time for the likely tax expenditures on those necessities. And so, yeah, that would actually turn something that we talked about, which could have been regressive in nature, into something that has, you know, a meaningful progressive element to it, making sure that the poorest among us aren't paying exorbitant tax rates on the things that they actually have to buy in order to live life. And so, yeah, we're with you. I think enacting a tax that is more regressive, creating larger debt burdens on the poorest households, potentially creating more income inequality, that's not a good way forward. But yeah, I don't know, maybe something like the fair tax, I think there's some merit to it.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out that the current tax code, it's kind of a nightmare. There are all sorts of loopholes that most folks out there don't get to participate in, because they don't have an expensive accountant. The way the current tax code is written doesn't always necessarily incentivize the most valuable things either, you know? Like, makes me think about real estate investors. They get some pretty great perks from the tax code. This is one of the reasons we think more folks should consider buying rental properties. But is that necessarily a good thing? Not exactly. You know, we'd rather everything be a bit simpler so that everyone could more easily understand the rules of the game. And so I say all this because incentives matter. And we actually think that with fewer arcane incentives, fewer loopholes, and a more understandable system, that would benefit the most people possible.
Think about, Matt, you and I playing a board game. We like board games. And all along the way, every 5 or 10 minutes, I concoct a new rule that you now have to abide by. And it's not even that some of these rules...
It's like Magic the Gathering. Right? like all of these different rules.
Maybe it is. Maybe it is like that. And so, but I guess...
What I'm saying is that we need more Magic the Gathering players to participate in the governance of our country.
True. Well, and sometimes these rules, they're not new, but sometimes they are. Like the Tax Cuts and Job Act of a few years back, that fundamentally changed the nature of some of the way we're taxed as American citizens. But then sometimes it's just stuff that is hidden, hard to find. Most people don't know about. And so because the rules of the game are vague, they're hard to understand, most people don't even know which rules exist or don't. Mm-hmm. It definitely makes a difference in how people perceive the tax system and the amount of taxes they pay. Sometimes people pay more in taxes just because they don't know certain things exist. And I think that's a shame.
Yeah, I guarantee Andrew Yang was a big Dungeons and Dragons fan.
I think he might have even admitted it at this point.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I'm sure he would.
He was definitely a nerd and a self-professed nerd. But yeah, one of the last things that Masa said is that he has societal goals and personal goals. And I think he's right. Sometimes those are in conflict, right? We all, as individuals, face some sort of conflict when it comes to our own money goals and furthering those, as well as realizing that paying taxes and being a virtuous citizen in the place where we live is important. And I will say this, it's not that everyone wants to shield themselves from taxation in order to give more of their money to local organizations that are helping people in need. You know, that's something we talk about often, and it's our goal to give away a decent chunk of our income each year to make sure that we are supporting organizations that are doing good work near where we live. But that also, by the way, you know, people want to pay less in taxes for different reasons. We'd love to see more people giving of their own accord, but it also doesn't mean that we think that the federal government is usually the most efficient allocator of resources, right?
Right. Oftentimes they're not.
Yeah. And that's one of the things, speaking of Andrew Yang, that he has talked about too, Matt. He's like, we have to make government more efficient so that people actually feel more comfortable paying their tax dollars. And I agree with that. I think certainly the government is the most effective solution for some things, but you know, local municipalities and nonprofits are often more effective when it comes to solving and preventing problems locally in your neighborhood or in your small town, instead of, you know, some sort of one fits all Washington DC sized approach.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think it's good to know that there's just no perfect system out there. And, you know, we're not all going to agree on which system of taxation is going to be best for our country. And we're also unlikely to see sweeping changes to our current tax system. And while it might not be the best possible system for maximizing fairness and incentivizing growth and entrepreneurship, there are many ways for savvy folks to use the current setup to their advantage while still being able to be generous with the wealth that they've been able to accumulate along the way. And I think it's also important to keep in mind that, you know, I just mentioned these sweeping changes. When you enact massive change across a system, across the country, it's oftentimes going to have negative consequences that are difficult to forecast, even when we're all in agreement that we should make these changes, at least initially. But I'm thinking about all the spending that we've done as a country over the past 2 years. Like, I mean, $5 trillion worth of spending to fight COVID, basically, right? Yeah. And what are we seeing now? We're seeing inflation, right? And this is something that everybody hates across the board. It is by far the number one issue that folks are concerned with. So I say this because I'm pointing out that I don't think quick, massive change is a good thing. I think it's important that we have different checks and balances that allow us to make incremental changes, even though a lot of people feel very strongly that there need to be massive changes to the system. When you do that, there are ripple effects that yeah. impact everybody, and especially, just like Masa was saying, especially those who are on the lower end of the earning spectrum, who are more seriously impacted with rising prices, say, of gas, where for somebody who's in the top 10%, rising gas prices, it's an inconvenience, right? But for somebody who's on the lower end of the spectrum, that has a massive impact sure. on their monthly budget.
Yeah, and it's amazing how sometimes just a small change, a small stone in a pond can have those large ripple effects, mm-hmm. Matt. Like you look at something like capping the amount of state and local tax deductions a person can take and how that influences where they decide to live, maybe yep. in a lower tax state. And so hurting the tax base where they used to live even more. Those are the kind of things that you have to think about, and they're so multifaceted. It's really hard to have some sort of silver bullet prescription
exactly
to fix all of the things that are economically ailing us, and to make the most efficient, best tax system that is progressive but also incentivizes the most important things at the same time.
That is right, man. It's fun to talk about taxes every now and then. It's fun to talk about some policy, but for everyone else who may not be into this, don't worry. These policy questions will be few and far between.
Right. Yeah, maybe we should just get on the next one, and this one is a little
let's,
sexier.
Let's
yeah.
keep moving. Exactly.
Let's take one from a listener who wants to know about the future of investing when it comes to digital art.
Hello, How to Money. This is me, Jared Franklin from Raleigh, North Carolina. I would like to ask if NFTs are good investments, and if they are, explain why, and if they're not, explain why not. It would definitely clear up some speculations I have about the topic. Thank you.
Oh, Matt, did you notice one of the last words that Jared used there?
Speculations.
That's right.
Let's clear those speculations out of your mind, Jared.
That's right, yeah. it is a great question, though, right? Because,
yes.
And we should probably, from the get-go, put our biases on the table when it comes to NFTs and the crypto space. It's not our favorite. We have, for years now, told people to tread lightly, to be careful, to not put much of their money at risk in this space. Only money they're willing to lose. And for a while, Matt, there were headlines that they were just like pointing to a handful of folks who had made big money, millions of dollars, buying cryptocurrency and selling or speculating on the purchase of NFTs. And there was the watershed moment when Beeple's infamous $69 million NFT was sold.
Man, talk about right place and the right time.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that guy got the peak, right?
What is he? Hopefully he didn't immediately take that money and stick it in Dogecoin or something. I don't know what he did with that money, but hopefully it is invested in widely diversified yeah. index funds.
And honestly, when you have $69 million, you can leave it in your Marcus savings account, and be, except for it's not FDIC insured past a certain point. But yeah, that's one of those things that made, it brought a lot of interest, I think, into the NFT space. But here's the thing. Stats show that most folks lose money buying NFTs. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of NFTs are worth less than $15, and only 1% sell for more than $1,500. So we're talking about a space where almost nothing has any tangible value. So even though the Bored Apes or the CryptoPunks, they get the headlines, most NFTs that people purchase in hopes of skyrocketing value, they don't pan out. They either kind of stand pat, they're just a cute little piece of art that you can enjoy on your computer, or they plummet in value, right? Mm-hmm. And you actually are at risk of losing money.
That's very true. Yeah. And, you know, it's still the Wild West, and you have to realize that before you jump into the NFT space, which, by the way, we haven't even said this yet because everyone just goes by NFTs, but non-fungible tokens is what NFT stands
right.
for.
You can't funge them.
They're impossible to funge. but that being said, if you want to invest a small bit of play money within NFTs, like we're not going to be completely against it, but only, Jared, if you're investing in the time-tested assets through tax-advantaged accounts in a big way first. It's, you know, definitely going to be more sexy and exciting to buy a cool piece of digital art than it is to boringly buy an index fund. But it would be foolish to go in that direction first. It's like downing like a bunch of protein shakes like multiple times a day in hopes that you're going to get ripped. Like, you know, it might be fine. It might be helpful in small amounts, but only if you're actually eating like the real nutritious and well-balanced food first, right? And it only makes sense if you're actually exercising and lifting weights regularly. Otherwise, you're just going to put on a bunch of additional weight where you don't want to.
Yeah, it's just empty calories, right? Unless you're actually turning it into the fuel to increase your muscle mass.
Exactly.
And so one of the coolest things I think about investing in art is getting to enjoy it, Matt. And so when it comes to, like, my wife and I, we've prioritized buying folk art in particular and local art. And so
you like that folksy art?
I do. And so it's one of those things where I could care less what it's actually worth. It's truly just for our enjoyment. It's for hanging up around the house. And we're not down with any sort of mass produced art really in our house. It's all individualized, mostly from local creators.
What about a local creator who does prints?
Yeah, I guess I've got some prints, yeah.
That's more
mass. But usually they're like 1 out of 40 or something. So you at least know that not everybody's got that in their house. But I just don't think of them as investments, right?
And if
one of the pieces of art I own is somehow worth $100,000 someday, that's cool. Like, I'll be thrilled. And it'll just be kind of fun to have some sort of monetary value associated with the piece. But
and we'll talk about it here on the show.
Yeah, yes, we will. But the emotional value and just the joy I get from owning it is the most important part. And so I think maybe someone investing in NFTs should think similarly. If they're betting on them, if they're hoping that the third horse in the fifth race is going to be the winner, and that the NFT, they're hoping to see that NFT value skyrocket, that's probably not worth banking on. But we'd suggest viewing digital art in the same way. If you like it and can afford it, then grabbing those pieces for just the sheer joy of it is something. It's something maybe worth spending money on, but hoping that it'll go up in price rapidly and you can flip it for to make a few bucks. That's something we kind of want people to avoid altogether.
Yeah, basically, if all of what Joel just said sounds foreign to you and you're like, wait, appreciating it for art's sake?
I'm just hoping to make money, guys.
Yeah, and if that's the case, then I think that's quite telling of maybe what your motives are and how it is that you are approaching NFTs. But yeah, think about it more as art, basically. I mean, like, we're finally getting settled in our house, Joel, and like, there's this wide blank wall that we're realizing, man, we don't have anything to go here that would look normal because of the format. It's just a really wide space, and we're starting to think about, oh, maybe we'll start saving up some money. Maybe we'll buy, quite possibly, the largest piece of art we've ever purchased. And
that's what I like to hear.
Yeah, but like,
if you want one on loan from the Larsgaard collection, just let me know. I'm happy to.
A lot of yours are verticals, though.
That's
like
true.
Like, we're looking at a very landscape style piece here, not like an actual landscape picture, but like landscape in orientation,
okay,
I should say,
gotcha.
in crop. But as we started having these conversations, we realized that what this thing is going to be worth is not even on our radar at all as far as what we're looking for. What we're thinking about is the enjoyment and the joy, and in particular, the calm that it, based on where this piece is going to be, like, Kate's going to see it a lot. And so we're like, okay, maybe it should be kind of like a calming piece in the midst of the craziness of our household. And so, yeah, that's why I think that's just a healthy way to approach how you view NFTs, because it truly is the Wild West, and we have no idea as to what the future holds with NFTs. I could easily see it being something that I think crypto is going to be around, personally. In particular, some of the bigger, more mainstream coins like Ethereum and Bitcoin. But I think there's going to be a lot of crypto coins that completely disappear in the same way. I think the majority of NFTs are going to completely up and vanish. And so, Jared, because of that, don't think about them like investments.
All right. Well, Jared, best of luck in your investing endeavors, and hopefully you maybe if you do NFTs, you just kind of dabble and you major on the main things. You focus on the most important things when it comes to investing. But we've got a couple more questions to get to, Matt, including one about being overinsured. Is that possible? And maybe to the detriment of other important financial endeavors you need to pursue. We'll talk about that right after this. Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that advertisement. Let's get back to our listener questions. This next one is from a listener who has recently purchased a house, and she's afraid that she might be wasting money every single month.
Hey, guys. This is Elizabeth calling from Columbia, South Carolina. I just started listening to you guys, and I really love the show. I likely missed this question, but what are your thoughts on home warranty plans? We got a year's worth free as a gift from our realtor in 2015. I never canceled. It's about $77 per month, then a $75 service fee each time you need to use it for the service. We've used it for repairs 3 times so far. So just wanted to know what you think about that. Thanks.
All right, Elizabeth, thank you for your question, and glad you found the show. Matt, this question is great because lots of folks end up in Elizabeth's position, right? They maybe inherited one of these home warranty plans, mm-hmm. not by choice, but because they bought a house and the seller decided to include it with the purchase as a nice little perk. And so, yeah, it's not something that they necessarily set out to buy on their own. And then that person might not cancel, like in Elizabeth's case, potentially wasting hundreds of dollars every single year for coverage that they don't need. And so let's talk about home warranties, because TLDR, like, our basic stance on home warranties is that they are a hard no for most people, for sure.
Totally. And also, if you happen to be in this position that Elizabeth was in, say you're buying a house and they're like, by the way, we're going to include this 1-year home warranty thing. See if there's a way that you could, instead of having them pay for that for you, I would rather you
give you money.
Yeah, I would rather you see that as a credit on your closing statement.
Yeah.
And then just remember to, you know, earmark a certain amount of funds that you're going to dedicate towards possible home repairs that you pay out of pocket. But basically, that's the antidote here to a home warranty, is for you to self-insure. Because we feel that these home warranty plans, that they're like the extended warranties that you get at the electronics store. We feel that they're pretty similar. We don't like either one of these things. And that's because while some folks, you know, they do come out ahead, the vast majority don't. We would much rather see you self-insure by funneling that money into your savings account and paying for repairs or upgrades from money that you now have on hand that you're earning in a high yield savings account. And over time, you're going to be better off financially, because these home warranties are mostly crummy products anyway. There are very few instances where somebody comes out on top.
And so, yeah, what these companies are selling is peace of mind. And honestly, it's something that they often can't deliver. And you talked about, Matt, some of these crummy products or crummy companies. When you look up ratings for many of these home repair companies, whether it's just Google reviews or elsewhere online, a lot of them are really bad. Like, people have had really terrible experiences. They feel like they're not getting much for what they're paying for. And so here's the thing, too. Some of your appliances, Elizabeth, they might already be covered by a manufacturer's warranty, making even some of that coverage unnecessary. You know, some credit cards will double a manufacturer's warranty, which helps even more. And when you're using these companies, here's the deal. You have no say over who's coming to your house to fix the problem.
Yeah.
This person might not even be able to come for weeks on end, or when they do, they might not be able to fix it very well. You might get a lousy repair person who attempts to fix it and can't quite do it. And so we'd rather see you basically have the cash on hand and then be able to hire a well-reviewed contractor to make that fix on your behalf. Or if the thing is just long in the tooth, it might need to be replaced altogether. But these home warranty companies, they sound like a smart value proposition. $500 once a year and then $75 for service calls. But in reality, there are a lot of hidden details that make these services not worth the money.
Yeah, well, and specifically in her case, I mean, she's paying close to $1,000 a year. And so when you do the math, like, you hear folks say to put aside 1% of the cost of your home for repairs every year. I think the median house purchase in the U.S. is something like $400,000, roughly. And so $1,000, I mean, she's like over a quarter of the way there in self-insuring, in setting aside that money herself, where she's going to be able to earn at least some interest on that money as it's sitting there in her account. But just generally speaking, if you are interested in these home warranties, it's important to take a look at the fine print of any of these plans that you're considering, because you might think that some things are actually covered when they are not covered. There are all sorts of little gotchas that can and do exist in many of these plans. Like, for example, some of the plans, they've got annual caps for what they'll pay out in the event of a claim, effectively limiting the benefit that you might be expecting. There are just far too many documented issues and online complaints about home warranty companies for me to feel comfortable telling anyone out there to go ahead and spend your hard-earned money on one of these things. You're not going to regret it.
Yeah.
This is something that's like, well, I mean, they're not scams, but it just may not be in your best financial interest for you to go with one of these guys rather than completely self-insure.
That's right. So build up your savings, Elizabeth, and stop paying for this home warranty. And that's going to leave you in a better financial position. And there is a chance for some people that maybe three of your appliances bite the dust in a month, and it's the worst possible time, right? So I want to make sure that you're not just like leapfrogging from this at a time where you don't have any savings built up. So you might want to let this run its course, but be saving up in the meantime so that you can, in the future, pay for your own repairs out of pocket.
Exactly. And at the very beginning, I think you're talking about how what they're selling here is peace of mind. There's a lot of peace of mind when you've got extra money sitting in the bank
that
you can do whatever you want with. So don't underestimate the power of cash in the bank.
That is one of those marketing techniques, right? That gets people to spend money, that it's like, oh yeah, I do want the peace of mind. I do want to not have to worry about that. But typically, to not have to worry about that means you being parted from your hard-earned dollars, which could be sitting in your account, giving you that peace of mind without having to pay that other person to make it happen.
Exactly. All right, let's get to our last question. And this is from a listener who's wondering if he perhaps has too much insurance. Let's hear it.
Hi, guys. This is Mike in Greensboro, North Carolina. Enjoyed the show, and my wife is beginning to listen in as well. We really liked the episode on how much to help to give your kids. Here's our dilemma that I'm hoping you can help us with, because we really want to do the right thing for us. I'm 58, my wife is 61. Back in 99, we both bought $250,000 in term insurance policies. These cost $20 and $30 respectively. They will become unaffordable at age 65 for me and 68 for her, so in about 10 years. Having a mortgage then and two kids, we each bought another $500,000 in term, and since then have converted half of that to comprehensive whole life, $60,000 for me and $50,000 for her. This costs us $101 and $115 per month respectively. Also unaffordable in about 10 years. The $225,000 left in the term costs us $80 and $90 per month respectively. Since then, though, we sold our home, moved in with our daughter and son-in-law for 4 months to help them with their twin boys, now almost four, and then to an apartment which we really enjoy. Our circumstances have changed. I had another grandson of 4 months old, but we have no debt, no car payments, but feel like we should be saving more. We did the conversion while we still had our mortgage and two kids heading to college as a forced way of saving, as well as a way to save for future health needs and even possibly as something to leave behind as a legacy. We have 6 months of rent payments saved, $20,000 in an HSA, and now under $100,000 combined in retirement accounts, a SEP and an IRA respectively. We feel like we should be saving more. Are we spending too much on insurance? Where can you guys suggest we scale back? Should I cash in the Comp Life, which is about $5,000 each, or quit paying on the higher term policies and open up a Roth IRA? Thanks for your time and consideration, guys. Cheers.
All right, Matt, this is a great question, and it's one we should dive into right away because
let's do it.
There's a lot to discuss. So, Mike, thank you so much for submitting this one. And insurance, of course, is it's a modern invention that can provide some of that peace of mind, Matt, that we were just talking about. Some types of insurance provide not just peace of mind, but a real backstop, right? In case we need it. And insurance basically helps pool risks so that we don't have to have something like 12 years of savings on hand,
right?
In case the worst possible scenario hits. The goal for most of these insurance products that we might get is to not use them. They're basically there allowing you to focus your efforts on other more important financial goals. But here's the thing, if you're making too many monthly payments to multiple insurance providers, you may not be able to reach those financial goals at all.
Right.
And so this insurance, right, how much Mike is paying every single month, it's likely not the thing that's flatlining his financial situation, but it is the monthly payments that might be bleeding him dry.
Exactly. Yeah. So Mike, before we dive into your details, it's important to take a step back and acknowledge that the purpose of life insurance is to simply replace the income that someone generates were they to die. And so you shared that you don't have any debt obligations anymore, which is awesome, but you didn't share your income or your expenses. And so I'm gonna assume that both you and your wife are generating income and that you collectively have the typical life expenses that most folks would expect. But I think the first thing that you should do is to determine, if your wife were to tragically die tomorrow, how would that financially impact your life?
Matt asks me that question 3 times a week, and I get tired of it, Matt. I'm not going to lie.
I'm really getting into stoicism. of course, like, these are terrible hypotheticals, Mike, for you to think through. But, you know, the question to ask yourself, like, would you be in a really difficult financial position? Because if so, then it's crucial to keep at least some coverage in place. But if her death wouldn't be an issue for you, financially speaking, of course, then you could consider eliminating most or even all of the life insurance coverage that you have on your wife.
Yeah. And then go through the same exercise, right, Mike? Because this time you're the one kicking the bucket. You're the
right
one passing
yeah.
away prematurely. How would your wife be financially impacted if she no longer had your income, right? If you're the one bringing home most of the bacon, then you're definitely going to want to maintain a life insurance policy. But let's say, for instance, she's the main breadwinner and she would be able to continue earning the same income mm-hmm. if you passed away.
Of course, she'd be sad.
Yeah, but she'd be bummed, but it may not. She might not need the insurance money, right?
Right.
And so let's talk about the type of life insurance that you should be considering. You know, you mentioned you bought term life insurance policies over 20 years ago. You started things off on the right foot, but unfortunately, it sounds like you might have complicated things a little bit by going with a whole life policy, and you'll notice that the premiums on those policies are, of course, significantly more expensive. Whole life can cost something like 5 to 15 times more than a term life policy without really much added benefit, and it's an overly complicated way of insuring against your death. So for this reason, we're fans of the much simpler version of term life insurance.
That is true. But it is tough to know whether you're spending too much on life insurance without more specifics, Mike. There are a lot of rules of thumb out there, but the easiest way for you to determine how much life insurance you need is to simply multiply the annual salary that you're wanting, or your wife's annual salary, by the number of years that you want to replace that income. But you know, when you have to make a decision between the optimum amount of life insurance coverage and not being able to invest for your future, that's when we would prefer that you get rid of some of that coverage so that you can really make hay building up a nest egg for your retirement years. Basically, if it was me in the situation that you're in, I'd likely can most of my insurance in order to prioritize my Roth IRAs or other workplace retirement accounts that you might have access to.
Yeah, I agree, Matt. I think now that Mike, he's kind of wondering if he's overinsured, and I think he probably is. And maybe it's not even that he's overinsured. The amount of insurance he has on he and his wife is probably fine if they had a significant, substantial investment portfolio
exactly.
to go along with it. And so
exactly. he might be properly insured, but given where their financial situation is, it just might be a bit out of balance.
Yes, yes. So my gut reaction would be to say, keep those first two term policies that he mentioned, keep those in place and ditch the other ones completely. Partly because they don't have young dependents who rely on their income. And also because—
Not anymore.
Yeah, investing, it has to be more on the front burner for them. And so, yeah, doing that, canceling those other policies while keeping the first two, make sure that they are insured against the worst possible scenario, but it also frees up something like $400 a month, mm-hmm. which would have a significant impact on their ability to retire comfortably, all while maintaining some life insurance, right? And that $400 can go a long way over the next decade, the rest of their working lifetime, to really make sure that their investments are beefed up in time for retirement, where hopefully they'll need to dig into that for 20 plus years in the future. And one other thing that we want to mention, Mike, is if you want to get your life insurance policy, in particular that whole life policy, checked out by an expert to determine whether or not you should surrender it in full and take the cash value, or whether you should keep paying on it. The Consumer Federation of America has a site called evaluatelifeinsurance.org, and there is a guy who will review your life insurance policy for a small fee, and I think that might be worth it if you're just not quite sure whether you're ready to get rid of it or not. He takes a look at individual insurance policies and kind of tells you exactly the route you should take.
Totally. But generally speaking, Mike's in a pretty great position, right? He talked about they've got like 6 months worth of rent saved up. They've got a bunch of money set aside in an HSA. And by freeing up some of these premiums they're paying every month, like within the next decade, they could easily more than double the amount that they've got in their portfolio.
I was thinking triple at least, right?
So, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But something else that's worth mentioning, I think, is I think it could feel maybe risky to say, okay, you're gonna remove all of this insurance from your life. And you might feel a little bit vulnerable. But Mike, you mentioned how you and your wife, how you even moved in with one of your kids recently to help out when they had their twins. I think a conversation worth having is talking with that kid or maybe the other kid and literally asking them, hey, were your mother or I, were one of us to die, would one of us be invited to live with you? Because I think that, obviously, that would have a significant impact on your cost of living. And I think that could provide some of that reassurance. It almost acts as a safety net that allows you to maybe make some of these moves to dropping this insurance that you likely won't need in order to prioritize something that you most definitely do need to do. And I think you could even approach it that way, where you're saying, hey,
it's like an additional premium-free insurance policy.
Yeah, exactly.
The family insurance policy.
And if that's something that is going to be there, if that were to be an option for some families, that's not an option, but it sounds like it might be more possible for y'all. But at the very least, I think it's worth having that conversation and talking about it, getting it started so that everyone's on the same page, and that could save y'all a lot of money. And what I was saying too is I think it shows a desire for you wanting to be a bit more proactive in your life. And if you're able to say to them, hey, look, this is us trying to make sure that we do have enough so that you most likely don't have to worry about us a decade from now, you know, 2 decades from now, 20 mm-hmm. years from now, you know, when your kids are going off to school. I really think that would be a conversation that they would appreciate you initiating.
I so agree. I think kids appreciate it, like especially once you're old enough and you've got kids of your own, you want to know that your parents are thinking about their own mm-hmm. financial future. And I think it can actually clear up some maybe false beliefs that they might have about, well, I guess I'm going to have to take care of mom and dad at some point. And maybe knowing that you are proactively thinking about your financial future and you're making strides in that direction, but that for a few years, you might need to move in if the worst possible thing happened. Like those are conversations that close family can have with one another.
Yeah.
And you can be open about. So
totally.
Mike, yeah. Again, keeping those first two policies might be helpful because they're super cheap. You got them at the right time, but ditching the other ones might make the most sense. And then, yeah, investing more of your money so that you can live an awesome retirement.
Let those policies run out. It sounds like, so he said they got them originally in 1999. Uh-huh. So I'm guessing that those things are about to run out in 2029.
That's right.
And so enjoy.
So he's still got some runway, right? Seven years of coverage.
Yeah. Enjoy the rest of that coverage.
Which might be all he needs.
But exactly. Then after that, you've got hopefully some more money in the bank. You've got family to count on. You've got Social Security as well, obviously.
Well, because the other thing, last thing I'll say, is insurance is great, but the insurance is going to run out. And at some point, you have to cover the other thing that's uninsurable. And he and his wife have Social Security to look forward to. Yeah. But you have to start insuring, saving ahead for your eventual, hopefully, decades of retirement. And the only way you can do that is to start putting money inside those retirement accounts.
That's right.
All right, Matt, let's get back to the beer.
Let's do it, man. Yeah, this episode we enjoyed Milkstachio. What were your thoughts on this beer that is brewed by Hop Butcher for the World and Dry Hop Brewers?
Yeah, so this one was a pistachio and chocolate milk stout. I love pistachios.
I do too.
Dark chocolate, not as much milk chocolate, but milk chocolate stouts are still good. And so I thought this one was actually really good, kind of interestingly weaved together nuttiness of pistachios combined with some chocolate. And just this brewer, it's funny, they're mostly known for IPAs and they make some great ones. This is the first one non-IPA I've had from them, but it
was Hop Butcher.
Yeah, yeah. But it was delightful.
They're not Malt Butcher for the World.
Right.
Hop Butcher.
This isn't one I'd want to drink like frequently, but ecstatic to have it because I thought it was tasty.
It's definitely a nice change of pace. I picked up very few pistachio notes. I feel like pistachio, it's one of those flavors that's incredibly nuanced. It's real subtle, and it typically has the savoriness to it. And I feel like that most of the beers that we enjoy have a savory nature to them. But I feel like this one was more milk stout than pistachio stout.
Yeah, that's true.
In my opinion. And it was really surprisingly effervescent as well. Oftentimes, milk stouts can be really just kind of thick. You know, like picturing just even chocolate milk in school in the carton, you're kind of pouring it out. You know the viscosity that talking about.
It's thick.
This is surprisingly thin in body, which you typically don't expect with a milk stout. And so, I don't know, it had a nice fizz to it while at the same time delivering those milk stout notes that I definitely enjoyed.
Yeah, still bringing solid flavor, even though it wasn't like
weighing you down
exactly
in a big way, which is nice, especially during the summer.
For sure. All right. Well, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode, right?
Let's wrap it up.
For folks who want show notes, go to our website at howtomoney.com. And for folks who have not signed up for the newsletter yet, seriously, come on, guys. Howtomoney.com.
You're missing out.
/newsletter. And I'm telling you, we're rocking it every single week.
And now that we're giving out our How to Money socks, you've got these different opportunities from week to week to potentially get your hands or specifically get your feet on some of these socks.
They're so comfy. They're so good looking.
In these socks.
And we're going to give away more and more of these pairs of awesome socks, but you got to be a newsletter subscriber to get them. So we hope to see you there in your inbox on Tuesday mornings. But Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. So until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.